Chapter 19. Diamonds and Stars. Mirana followed closely as she dared on Cadswain's heels, 100 questions bubbling on her tongue. But Cadswain was not a woman whose sleeve you plucked. She decided who she noticed and when. Anura held her silence too, the pair of them drawn along in the other's wake down the palace corridors, down flights of stairs, polished marble at first, then plain dark stone. Mirana exchanged glances with her sister Grey and felt a moment's pang. She did not know the woman, really, but Anura wore the steely look of a girl on her way to the mistress of novices, determined to be brave. They were not novices. They were not children. She opened her mouth and closed it, intimidated by the grey bun bobbing ahead of her, with its dangling moons and stars and birds and fish. Cadswain was Cadswain. Mirana had met her once before, or at least listened to her and been spoken to when she was a novice. Sisters had come from every Aja to see the woman, filled with an awe they could not hide. Once Cadswain Maladrin had been the standard by which every new entry into the novice books was judged. Until Elaine Trecand, none had come to the White Tower in her lifetime who could match that standard, much less surpass it. In more ways than one, her like had not walked among Aes Sedai for 1,000 years. A refusal to accept selection as a sitter was unheard of, yet it was said she had refused, and at least twice. It was said she had spurned being raised head of the Green Aja, too. It was said she once vanished from the tower for 10 years because the hall intended to raise her Amerlin. Not that she had ever spent a day more in Tar Valon than absolutely necessary. Word of Cadswain came to the tower, stories to make sisters gape, adventures to make those who dreamed of the shawl shiver. She would end a legend among Aes Sedai, if she was not already. The shawl had graced Mirana's shoulders for over 25 years when Cadswain announced her retirement from the world, her hair already solid grey, and everyone assumed her long dead when the Aiel War erupted another 25 years on. But before the fighting was 3 months old, she reappeared, accompanied by 2 warders, men long in the tooth, yet still hard as iron. It was said Cadswain had had more warders over the years than most sisters had shoes. After the Aiel retreated from Tar Valon, she retired once more, but some said, more than half seriously, that Cadswain would never die so long as even a spark of adventure remained in the world. "And that is the sort of nonsense that novices babble," Mirana reminded herself firmly. "Even we die eventually." Yet Cadswain was still Cadswain. And if she was not one of those sisters who had appeared in the city after Althor was taken, the sun would not set tonight. Mirana moved her arms to adjust her shawl and realized it was hanging on a peg in her room. Ridiculous. She needed no reminders of who she was. If only it had been someone other than Cadswain. A pair of wise ones standing in the mouth of a crossing corridor watched them pass, cold pale eyes in stony faces beneath their dark headscarves. Edara and Lane. Both could channel, and quite strongly. They might have risen high had they gone to the tower as girls. Cadswain went by without seeming to notice the Wilder's disapprobation. Anura did, frowning and muttering, slender braids swaying as she shook her head. Mirana kept her own eyes on the floor tiles. Undoubtedly it would fall to her now, explaining to Cadswain the compromise that had been worked out with the wise ones last night, before she and the others were brought to the palace. Anura did not know, she was no part of it, and Mirana had small hope that Rafella or Varen would appear, or anyone else she might somehow foist the duty onto. It was a compromise in a way, and perhaps the best that could be expected under the circumstances, yet she strongly questioned whether Cadswain would see it so. She wished she did not have to be the one to convince her. Better to pour tea for those cursed men for a month. She wished she had not been so free with her tongue with young Althor. Knowing why he had made her serve tea was no balm for being sealed off from every advantage she might have gained from it. She would rather think she had been caught in some Taviran swirling of the pattern than believe that a young man's eyes, like polished blue-gray gems, had set her babbling from pure fright. but either way, she had handed all the advantage to him on a tray. She wishing was for children. She had negotiated countless treaties, many of which had actually accomplished what was intended. She had ended 3 wars and stopped 2 dozen more before they began, faced kings and queens and generals and made them see reason. Even so, she found herself promising that she would not utter 1 word of complaint, no matter how often that man made her play the maidservant, if only Sionid would pop around the next corner, or Masuri, or Faeldrin, or anyone at all. Light! If only she could blink her eyes and find that everything since leaving Salidar had been a bad dream. Surprisingly, Cadsawain led them straight to the small room that Bera and Kiruna shared, deep in the bowels of the palace, where the servants lived. A tight window set high in the wall, yet level with the paving stones of a courtyard outside, let in a little stream of light, but the room seemed murky. Cloaks and saddlebags and a few dresses hung from pegs in the cracked, yellowing plaster walls. Gouges marred the bare wooden floor, though some effort had been made to smooth them. A tiny, battered round table stood in one corner, and an equally beaten washstand in another, with a chipped basin and pitcher. Mirana eyed the small bed. It did not look that much narrower than the one she was forced to share with Sionid and Masuri, 2 doors farther down. That room was larger by perhaps a pace each way, but not meant for 3. Koiran and the others still held in the Aiel tents probably were much more comfortable as prisoners. Neither Bera nor Kiruna was present, but Daigian was, a plump, pale woman who wore a thin silver chain in her long black hair, with a round moonstone dangling in the middle of her forehead. Her dark Kyrianan dress bore 4 thin stripes of color across the bodice, and she had added slashes in the skirts, white for her Aja. A younger daughter of one of the lesser houses, she had always minded Mirana of a pouter pigeon. When Cadsawain entered, Daigian rose on her toes expectantly. There was only 1 chair in the room, little more than a stool with an excuse of a back. Cadsawain took that and sighed. "Tea, please. 2 sips of what that boy poured, and I could have used my tongue to sole a shoe." The glow of Saidar immediately surrounded Daigian, though faintly, and a dented tin teapot rose from the table, flows of fire heating the water as she opened a small brass-bound tea-chest. With no other choice for place to sit, Mirana settled onto the bed, adjusting her skirts and shifting on the lumpy mattress while she tried to order her thoughts. This might well be as important a negotiation as she had ever undertaken. After a moment, Anura joined her, perching on the lip of the mattress. "I take it by your presence, Mirana," Cadsawain said abruptly. "The tales of the boys submitting to Elida are false. Don't look so surprised, child. Did you think I didn't know your associations?" She gave that word such a twist it sounded as filthy as any soldier's expletive. "And you, Anura?"
"I am here only to advise Berylaine, though the truth of it is, she ignored my advice by coming in the first place."
The Taraboner woman held her head up, voice confident. She was rubbing her thumbs for all she was worth, though. She could not do well at the negotiating table if she was that transparent. "For the rest," she said carefully, "I have reached no decision as yet."
"A wise decision, that," Cadsawain murmured, with a pointed look at Mirana. "It seems that in the last few years far too many sisters have forgotten they possess brains, or discretion. There was a time when Aes Sedai reached their decisions after calm deliberation, with the good of the tower always in the front of their thoughts. Just remember what the Sanche girl got from meddling with Althor, Anura. Walk too near a forge fire and you can be burned badly."
Mirana lifted her chin, working her neck to ease its tightness. Realizing what she was doing, she made herself stop. The woman did not stand that far above her. Not really. Just higher than any other sister.
"If I may ask," too diffident, but worse to stop and start over, "what are your intentions, Cadsawain?"
She struggled to maintain dignity.
"Obviously you have been holding yourself aside until now. Why have you decided to approach Althor at this particular time?" You were rather undiplomatic with him.
You might as well have slapped his face, Anura put in, and Marana colored.
Of the two of them, Anura should have been having the harder time with Cadzwain by far, but she was not the one stumbling over her words.
Cadzwain shook her head in pitying style.
If you want to see what a man is made of, push him from a direction he doesn't expect. There's good metal in that boy, I think, but he's going to be difficult.
Steepling her fingers, she peered across them at the wall, musing to herself.
He has a rage in him fit to burn the world, and he holds it by a hair. Push him too far off balance? Faw! Althor's not so hard yet as Loghain Ablar or Mazrim Taim, but 100 times as difficult, I fear.
Hearing those three names together clove Marana's tongue to the roof of her mouth.
You have seen Loghain and Taim both? A staring Anura said. Taim, he is following Althor, so I hear.
Marana managed to swallow a relieved sigh. Tales of Dumai's wells had not had time to spread yet. They would, though.
I do have ears to catch rumors, too, Anura, Cadzwain said acerbically, though I could wish I didn't, for what I hear of that pair. All my work thrown away to be done over. Others as well, but I did my share. And then there are these black coats, these Ashaman.
Taking a cup from Daigyan, she smiled warmly and murmured thanks. The round-cheeked white seemed ready to curtsy, though all she did was retreat to a corner and fold her hands. She had been longer a novice and accepted than anyone in living memory, barely allowed to remain in the tower, gaining the ring by a fingernail and the shawl by an eyelash. Daigyan was always self-effacing around other sisters. Breathing the steam from her teacup, Cadzwain went on, suddenly chatting pleasantly.
It was Loghain, practically on my doorstep, that lured me away from my roses. Faw! A scuffle at a sheep fair could have lured me from those light cursed plants. What's the point if you use the power, but do it without and you grow 10,000 thorns for every... Faw! I actually considered taking the oath as a hunter, if the Council of Nine would allow it. Well, it was a nice few months, chasing down Loghain, but once he was taken, escorting him to Tarvalin appealed as much as the roses. I wandered a bit to see what I could find, perhaps a new warder, though it's a bit late for that in any fairness to the man, I suppose. Then I heard of Taim, and I was off to Saldaea as fast as I could ride. There's nothing for a bit of excitement like a man who can channel.
Abruptly her voice hardened, and her gaze.
Were either of you involved in that vileness? Right after the Aiel War?
Despite herself, Marana gave a confused start. The other woman's eyes spoke of the block and the headsman's axe.
What vileness? I don't know what you were talking about.
That accusing glare hit Anura so hard she almost fell off the bed.
The Aiel War? She gasped, steadying herself. The years after I spent trying to make the so-called Grand Coalition more than a name.
Marana looked at Anura with interest. A good many of the Grey Aja had scurried from capital to capital after the war in a futile effort to hold together the alliance that had formed against the Aiel, but she had never known Anura was one of them. She could not be that bad a negotiator if she was.
So did I, she said.
Dignity. Since setting out after Althor from Camelin, she had not retained much of that. The few scraps remaining were too precious to lose. She made her voice calm and firm.
What vileness do you mean, Cadzwain?
The grey-haired woman simply waved the question away as though she had never spoken the word. For a moment, Marana wondered whether Cadzwain's wits might be wandering. She had never heard of it happening to a sister, but most Aes Sedai did go into retreat at the close of their lives, far from the stratagems and turbulence that none but sisters ever knew. Far from everyone, often as not. Who could say what befell them before the end? One look at the clear, steady gaze regarding her over that teacup quickly disabused her of any such notion. Anyway, 20-year-old vileness, whatever it had been, certainly could not hold a candle to what the world confronted now, and Cadzwain still had not answered her original questions. What did she intend? And why now? Before Marana could ask again, the door opened and Bera and Kiruna were herded in by Coriel Hovian, a boyishly slim yellow with thick black eyebrows and a mass of raven hair that gave her something of a wild appearance, no matter how neatly she dressed. And she always dressed for a country dance, with masses of embroidery on her sleeves and bodice and up the sides of her skirts. There was barely room to move with so many people in this confined space. Coriel never failed to seem amused, whatever happened, but now she wore a wide smile somewhere between disbelief and outright laughter. Kiruna's eyes flashed in a face of frozen arrogance, while Bera fumed, mouth tight and forehead creased, until they saw Cadswain. Marana supposed that for them it must be as if she had found herself face to face with Alin Difella, or Sevlana Maso, or even Mabriam Ensherid. Their eyes bulged. Kiruna's jaw dropped. "I thought you were dead," Bera breathed. Cadswain sniffed irritably. "I'm growing tired of hearing that. The next imbecile I hear it from is going to yelp for a week." Anora began studying the toes of her slippers. "You'll never guess where I found these two," Coriel said in her lilting Murandian accent. She tapped the side of her upturned nose, the way she did when about to tell a joke, or what she saw as one. Spots of color appeared in Bera's cheeks, and larger in Kiruna's. Bera there was sitting meek as a mouse under the eyes of half a dozen of those Aiel Wilders, who told me, bold as you please, that she couldn't come with me until Sorelia. Oh, now that woman's a harridan to give you nightmares, she is. I couldn't have Bera until Sorelia was done with her private chat with the other apprentice, our darling Kiruna there. It was no longer a matter of spots. Kiruna and Bera reddened to their hair, refusing to meet anyone's eye. Even Daigyan stared at them. Relief surged through Marana in wonderful waves. She would not have to be the one to explain how the wise ones had interpreted that wretched Althor's orders that the sisters were to obey them. They were not really apprentices. There were no lessons involved, of course. What could a great lot of Wilders, savages at that, teach Aes Sedai? It was just that the wise ones liked to know where everyone fit. Just. Bera or Kiruna could tell how Althor had laughed, and said it made no difference to him and he expected them to be obedient pupils. No one was having an easy time bending her neck, least of all Kiruna. Yet Cadswain did not demand explanations. "I expected a dog's dinner," she said dryly, "but not a bucket from the midden. Let me see if I have the straight of it. You children who stand in rebellion against a lawfully raised Amarlin have now somehow associated yourselves with the Althor boy, and if you are taking orders from these Aiel women, I assume you take his as well." Her grunt was disgusted enough for a mouthful of rotten plums. Shaking her head, she peered into her teacup, then fixed the pair again. "Well, what's one treason more or less? The Hall can put you on your knees from here to Tarmangaiden for penance, but they can only take your heads once. What of the rest, out in the Aiel camp? All Elidas, I suppose. Have they also apprenticed themselves? None of us have been allowed as close as the first row of tents. These Aiel seem to have no love of Aes Sedai." "I do not know, Cadswain," Kiruna answered, so red-faced she appeared about to catch fire. "We have been kept apart." Mirana's eyes widened. She had never before heard Kiruna sound deferential. Bera, on the other hand, drew a deep breath. She already stood straight, yet she seemed to straighten herself for an unpleasant task. "Elida is not," she began heatedly. "Elida is overambitious, as near as I can make out," Cadswain broke in, leaning forward so abruptly that Mirana and Anora both started back on the bed, though she was not looking at them. "And she may be a catastrophe simmering, but she is still the Amarlin seat raised by the Hall of the Tower in full accordance with the laws of the Tower." "If Elida is a lawful Amarlin, why have you not obeyed her order to return?" All that betrayed Bera's lack of composure was the stillness of her hands on her skirts. Only a marked effort to keep from clutching or smoothing could hold them so motionless. "So one of you has a little backbone," Cadswain laughed softly, but her eyes did not look mirthful at all.
Leaning back, she sipped her tea. "Now sit down. I have a great many more questions."
Mirana and Anura rose, offering their places on the bed, but Kiruna simply stood peering at Cadswain worriedly, and Bera glanced at her friend, then shook her head. Coriel rolled her blue eyes, grinning broadly for some reason, but Cadswain did not seem to care.
"Half the rumors I hear," she said, "concern the Forsaken being loose. It would hardly be a surprise with all else, but do you have any evidence? For or against?"
Before very long, Mirana was glad to be sitting. Before very long, she knew what laundry felt, going through the laundress's mangle. Cadswain did all the questioning, dodging from topic to topic so you never knew what was coming next. Coriel held her peace except for chuckling now and then or shaking her head, and Daigyan did not even do that, of course. Mirana caught the worst, her and Bera and Kiruna, yet Anura was certainly not spared. Every time Beralane's advisor relaxed, thinking she was in the clear, Cadswain skewered her anew. The woman wanted to know everything, from the Althor boy's authority with the Aiel to why a seafolk wave mistress was anchored in the river, from whether Moiraine truly was dead to whether the boy really had rediscovered traveling and whether Beralane had bedded him or had any intention of it. What Cadswain thought of the answers was impossible to say, except once, when she learned that Alanna had bonded Althor and how. Her mouth compressed to a thin line and she frowned a hole through the wall, but while everyone else expressed disgust, Mirana thought of Cadswain saying she had considered taking another warder herself. The answer was ignorance entirely too often to suit, but saying you did not know failed to quench Cadswain's appetite. She required every last shred and particle you did know, even if you did not know you knew it. They managed to keep a little back, most of what had to be kept back, yet a few surprising things came out that way, some very surprising, even from Anura, who, it turned out, had been receiving detailed letters from Beralane almost from the day the girl rode north. Cadswain demanded answers but gave none, and that worried Mirana. She watched faces grow dogged and defensive and apologetic, and wondered whether her own looked the same. "Cadswain," she had to make one more effort. "Cadswain, why have you decided to take an interest in him now?" An unblinking gaze met hers for a moment, then Cadswain turned her attention to Bera and Kiruna. "So they actually managed to kidnap him right out of the palace," the gray-haired woman said, holding out her empty cup for Daigyan to refill. No one else had been offered tea. Cadswain's expression and tone were so neutral that Mirana wanted to tear her own hair. Althor would not be pleased if he learned Kiruna had revealed the kidnapping, however inadvertently. Cadswain used any slip of your tongue to pry out more than you meant to say. At least the details of his treatment had not come out. He had made plain how displeased he would be if that happened. Mirana thanked the light that the woman was not staying with any one subject for long. "You are sure it was Taim? And you are sure these black coats didn't arrive on horses?" Bera answered reluctantly and Kiruna sullenly. They were as certain as they could be. No one had actually seen the Ashaman come or depart, and the hole that brought them all here could have been made by Althor, which did not satisfy at all, of course. "Think! You aren't silly girls any longer, or shouldn't be? Faw! You must have noticed something!" Mirana felt ill. She and the others had spent half the night arguing over what their oath meant before deciding it meant exactly what they had said, with no loopholes to wriggle through. At last, even Kiruna conceded that they must defend and support Althor as well as obey, that standing aside in the slightest was not permitted. What that might mean when it came to Elida and the sisters loyal to her really concerned no one. At least, no one admitted any concern. The mere fact of what they had decided was stunner enough. But Mirana wondered whether Bera or Kiruna had yet realized what she had. They might just find themselves opposing a legend, not to mention whatever sisters besides Coriel and Daigyan had chosen to follow her. Worse. Cadswain's eyes rested on her for a moment, giving away nothing, demanding everything. Worse, Mirana was sure that Cadswain knew that very well. Hurrying along the palace corridors, Min ignored greetings from half a dozen maidens she knew, just trotted right by without a word in return, never considering that she was being rude. Trotting was not easy in heeled boots, the fool things women did for men. Not that Rand had asked her to wear the boots, but she put them on the first time with him in mind, and she had seen him smile. He liked them. Light, what was she doing thinking about boots? She should never have gone to Kola Vair's apartments. Shivering, blinking back unshed tears, she began to run. As usual, a number of maidens were squatting on their heels beside the tall doors worked with gilded rising suns. Their shufa hung about their shoulders, and their spears lay across their knees, yet there was nothing casual about them. They were leopards, waiting for something to kill. Usually maidens made Min uneasy, for all they were friendly enough. Today she would not have cared if they were veiled. "He's in a foul temper," Rialin warned, but made no move to stop her. Min was one of the few allowed to enter Rand's presence without being announced. She straightened her coat and tried to settle herself. She was not sure why she had come, except that Rand made her feel safe. Burn him! She had never needed anyone to feel safe before. Just inside the room she stopped, aghast. Automatically she pushed the door shut behind her. The place was a shambles. A few glittering shards clung to some of the mirror frames, but most of the glass lay scattered across the floor. The dais was on its side, the throne that had stood atop it just gilded flinders where it had been smashed against a wall. One of the stand lamps, heavy iron beneath the gilt, had been twisted into a hoop. Rand sat in one of the smaller chairs in his shirt sleeves, arms dangling and head back, staring at the ceiling. Staring at nothing. Images danced about him and colored auras flickered and flared. He was like Aes Sedai in that. She had no need of illuminators when Rand or an Aes Sedai was in sight. He did not move as she walked farther into the room. He did not seem aware of her at all. Shattered bits of mirror crunched beneath her boots. A foul temper indeed. Even so, she felt no fear. Not of him. She could not begin to imagine Rand harming her. For him she felt enough to nearly purge the memory of Kola Vair's apartments from her head. She had long since reconciled herself to being hopelessly in love. Nothing else mattered. Not that he was an unsophisticated countryman, younger than she, not who or what he was, not that he was doomed to go mad and die if he was not killed first. "I don't even mind having to share him," she thought, and knew how tightly she was caught if she could lie to herself. That she had forced herself to accept. Elaine had a part of him, a claim on him, and so did this Avienda woman she had yet to meet. What could not be mended must be lived with, so her Aunt Jan always said, especially when your brains had gone soft. Light, she'd always prided herself on keeping her wits." She stopped beside one of the chairs, where the dragon's scepter had driven into the thick wooden back so hard that the point stood out nearly a hand behind. In love with a man who did not know, who would send her away should he ever become aware. A man she was sure was in love with her, and with Elaine, and this Avienda, too. That she rushed by. What could not be mended? He was in love with her and refused to admit it. Did he think that just because Mad Luz Theron Telamon had killed the woman he loved, he was fated to as well?
"I'm glad you came," he said suddenly, still staring at the ceiling. "I've been sitting here alone. Alone." He gave a bitter bark of a laugh. "Herod Fell is dead."
"No," she whispered. "Not that sweet little old man?" Her eyes stung.
"He was torn apart."
Rand's voice was so tired, so empty.
"Idrian fainted when she found him. She lay in a stupor half the night and was nearly incoherent when finally roused. One of the other women at the school gave her something to make her sleep. She was embarrassed about that. When she came to me, she started crying again, and it had to be Shadowspawn. What else could tear a man limb from limb?"
Without raising his head, he smacked a fist down on the chair arm so hard the wood creaked.
"But why? Why was he killed? What could he have told me?" Min tried to think. She truly did. Master Fell was a philosopher. He and Rand discussed everything from the meaning of parts of the prophecies of the dragon to the nature of the hole into the Dark One's prison. He let her borrow books, fascinating books, especially where she had to work to puzzle out what it was they said. He had been a philosopher. He would never lend her a book again. Such a gentle old man, wrapped up in a world of thought and startled when he noticed anything outside it. She treasured a note he had written to Rand. He had said she was pretty, that she distracted him. And now he was dead. Light. She had had too much of death. I shouldn't have told you. Not like that. She gave a start. She had not heard Rand cross the room. His fingers brushed her cheek, wiping away tears. She was crying. "I'm sorry, Min," he said softly. "I am not a very nice person anymore. A man is dead because of me, and all I can do is worry why he was killed." Flinging arms around him, she buried her face against his chest. She could not stop crying. She could not stop trembling. "I went to Kola Vair's apartments." Images flashed in her head. The empty sitting room, all the servants gone, the bedchamber. She did not want to remember, but now she had begun, she could not stop the words tumbling out. "I thought, since you'd exiled her, maybe there was some way around the viewing I had of her." Kola Vair had been wearing what must have been her finest gown, dark silk that glistened with falls of delicate aged ivory Sovara lace. "I thought for once it didn't have to be that way. You're Taviran. You can change the pattern." Kola Vair had donned a necklace and bracelets of emeralds and fire drops, and rings with pearls and rubies, surely her best pieces, and yellow diamonds had been arranged in her hair, a fair imitation of the crown of Kyrian. Her face. She was in her bedchamber, hanging from one of the bedposts, bulging eyes and protruding tongue in a blackened, swollen face, toes a foot above the overturned stool. Sobbing helplessly, Min sagged against him. His arms went around her slowly, gently. "Oh, Min, you have more pain than pleasure from your gift. If I could take your pain, I would, Min. I would." Slowly it penetrated that he was trembling too. Light. He tried so hard to be iron, to be what he thought the dragon reborn must, but it cut him when somebody died because of him. Kola Vair probably no less than Fell. He bled for everyone harmed and tried to pretend he did not. "Kiss me," she mumbled. When he did not move, she looked up. He blinked at her uncertainly, eyes now blue, now gray, a morning sky. "I'm not teasing." How often had she teased him, sitting on his lap, kissing him, calling him sheep-herder because she dared not say his name for fear he might hear the caress. He put up with it because he thought she was teasing and would stop if she believed it did not affect him. Ha! Aunt Jan and Aunt Rana said you should not kiss a man unless you intended to marry him, but Aunt Myron seemed to know a little more of the world. She said you should not kiss a man too casually because men fell in love so easily. "I'm cold inside, sheep-herder. Kola Vair and Master Fell. I need to feel warm flesh. I need... please." His head lowered so slowly. It was a brother's kiss at first, mild as milk water, soothing, comforting. Then it became something else. Not at all soothing. Jerking upright, he tried to pull away. "Min, I can't. I have no right..." Seizing two handfuls of his hair, she pulled his mouth back down, and after a little while he stopped fighting. She was not certain whether her hands began tearing at the laces of his shirt first or his at hers, but of one thing she was absolutely sure. If he even tried to stop now, she was going to fetch one of Rialin's spears, all of them, and stab him. On her way out of the Sun Palace, Cadzuane studied the Aiel Wilders she saw as well as she could without being obvious. Coriel and Daigyan followed in silence. They knew her well enough by now not to disturb her with chatter, which could not be said of all those who paused a few days at Arilyn's little palace before she sent them on. A great many Wilders, every one staring at the Aes Sedai as if at flea-ridden curs covered with running sores, tracking mud over a new rug. Some people looked at Aes Sedai with awe or adoration, others with fear or hate. But Cadzwaine had never seen contempt before, not even from white cloaks. Even so, any people who produced so many Wilders should be sending a river of girls to the tower. That would have to be seen to eventually, and to the pit of doom with custom if need be, but not now. The Althor boy needed to be kept intrigued enough that he allowed her near him, and off balance enough that she could nudge him where she wanted without him realizing. One way or another, anything that might interfere with that must be controlled or suppressed. Nothing could be allowed to influence him or upset him in the wrong way. Nothing. The shiny black coach was waiting in the courtyard behind a patient team of 6 matched greys. A serving man rushed to open the door painted with a pair of silver stars atop red and green stripes, bowing to the 3 of them till his bald head was nearly level with his knees. He was in shirt sleeves and breeches. Since coming to the Sun Palace, she had not noticed anyone in livery yet, except a few wearing Dobraine's colors. No doubt the servants were unsure what to wear and afraid to make a mistake. "I may skin Elida when I can lay hands on her," she said as the coach lurched into motion. "That fool child has made my task nearly impossible." And then she laughed so abruptly that Daigyan stared before she could control her eyes. Coriel's smile widened in anticipation. Neither understood, and she did not try to explain. All of her life, the fastest way to interest her in anything had been to tell her it was impossible. But then, over 270 years had passed since she last encountered a task she could not perform. Any day now might be her last, but young Althor would be a fitting end to it all.